ladies and gentlemen, it's a great pleasure to be here on behalf of the LSE and all our colleagues, and I'm going to be just very brief. Greg has done a great job of summarizing a full day, the 9-hour discussion yesterday with the 7 metros that he's described. And I'm in fact going to ask, if we may, all the participants to come and join us now at the table. Will you just come along, because I don't want to spend too long introducing and rehearsing the issues that Greg has already mentioned, but welcome, in a way, the individuals who've actually been at the center stage of the changes that have been described to you and the changes that are being proposed by the three American metro regions. I'm going to start by just introducing the individual ones, and Greg, I'm glad that you're joining us in the discussion we're going to have all together. Let me just start by introducing Sergio Chiamparino, the gentleman here on my right, who's the mayor of Torino, of Turin, in the Piemonte region of northern Italy. He has been the mayor now for nearly 10 years. He needs to stand down next year over 2 very successful terms. He was re-elected in 2006 with a 67% majority, which is not an easy task for mayors, as many of you know. We also have Chris Andreessen, who is the Director of Economic Development in the Puget Sound Regional Council. We will hear from her a lot about the interesting plans for regeneration and focusing and harnessing some of the enormous talent, particularly in the environmental activities and in that part of the United States surrounding Seattle. We have the mayor of Minneapolis, Mayor Rybak, who yesterday with Mayor Coleman from St. Paul put forward, I think, some very, very clear ideas of how that region of the United States is looking forward towards reclaiming entrepreneurship, which was there for a number of years in the past. Brad Whitehead, who's the president of the Fund for Our Economic Future in Northeast Ohio, who again spoke yesterday about how Cleveland and the wider metro area wants to, in a way, reconnect to its past, but look forward to a new and more engaged future with strong investment in new activities, but also made important statements about the connections to the new immigrants and the less fortunate in the area. So those are all the issues of the 4 speakers. But I'm going to start by asking Jordi William Cardenas, who's the first deputy mayor of the city of Barcelona. He's the president of a number of the agencies that, in fact, Greg has already talked about. Interesting and importantly for this audience, Jordi is not only responsible for the municipality of Barcelona, so strictly speaking, the city, but also has served in the government of Catalonia before that, in other words, the wider region that we've heard described before as the Secretary of State and working alongside, in fact, a key figure and a key friend of many people in the room, Pascal Maragall. The format is that I will ask each of the 5 to speak for roughly 5 minutes. We will then open up the discussion between us. We have to wrap up at 12:30 for very important reasons, food. I'm amazed you've all sat here without any coffee breaks and very quietly and attentively listened, so I congratulate you already. And we will leave 10 minutes, I hope, if we stick to time here, to some questions from the floor. So I'd like to start by asking Jordi to give us
No.
I'd like to start by asking Jordi to summarize the initiatives of the year, taking Greg's description of what the problem was, so to speak, and telling us how you picked the city up from its boots.
Well, first of all, thanks all of you for inviting us to be here. It's a great honor for Barcelona to be able to be in Chicago. That's the first point. The weather is fantastic from our point of view, so it's very comfortable to be here, especially if you come from the Mediterranean area. That's the first point. No. Second, I wouldn't say much about Barcelona in terms of what London School of Economics and Brooklyn Institute have said. There's a lot of data there. But just let me say why Barcelona wanted to stand up. It's been meant before, there were crises, there were dictatorship. So we wanted to do, well, go on, or just start pedaling, just riding a bicycle. Joan Clos, who will later on speak, he's been a former mayor of Barcelona. She also can give some ideas of what and how we wanted to do it. First of all, don't rely on others to solve your problems. If you wait to the federal government come and solve your problems, I may say you won't have it. Never. Because they are fantastic people. They always understand you, but never put what they have to put. That's the experience of Barcelona. And that's what we have done it, working together with the society, with the public and private sector. Working together. That's why we achieved the Olympic Games. That's why we achieve a lot of other things. Yesterday, I heard a word, we can. Wonderful word. We move to another concept, do it. Which is a bit much shorter, but that explains the way of understanding we have already done things in Barcelona. Working with unemployment, high rates, 12%, 7 points less than in Spain. Why? Tackling with Barcelona Activa, not waiting others to come and solve our problems. Working together with others. That's the only way you have to learn and to work together and to try to understand the needs. Those who are in the city are in the first trench of the problems. And the people don't ask and don't understand for excuses. They want immediate answers. They want immediate responses. Metro policies are wonderful. But you have to answer your citizens, what are you going to do today because they have unemployment? What are you going to do with that corporation who wants someone space to build up their corporation? So you have to be quick and you have to be ready to answer that. That's what Barcelona stands for. To be active, to be proactive. That's why we built up this agency which is called Barcelona Activa instead of Barcelona Passiva. We move it to more Activa. That's why we understand things. Of course, there are players. Torino is a good friend of ours. Munich are good friends of ours. We are in a global way, in a global world that we are playing. Against whom? Singapore, Shanghai, Abu Dhabi, Istanbul. These are the new players. And the United States are also players. But please, open yourself. America is very important for the rest of the world. Don't be looking yourself all the time. Because the others are also looking at you. And you're looking only to yourself. You're missing the view of others.
Rodri, thank you for that warning, but I'm sure that in the presentations that we'll hear in a moment for the three American metro regions, perhaps we won't have any sense of feeling down. There was a sense in the room yesterday, I think that's what you were alluding to, of, oh dear, what should we do? And of course, what our point today is actually there are a lot that has been done, and we're going to hear more about that, and a lot of plans which are going to be proposed. But just, I want to go back to you. Not everyone understands the difference between active and passive, activa and passiva. Right? You set up an agency which made a change. Right? How do you measure that? Tell us the one thing you think that 10 years ago wasn't the case and now is the case. Well, make it concrete.
2,500 people jobs a year, 1,200 roughly new small companies.
But one could say that the market could have delivered that anyway. What did you do to help?
Because I think one of the answers now is too much offer and demand, to be proactive. If you wait the market, sometimes it doesn't feed so easily. So what we're doing is to offer, to be a facilitator. That would say this is the key word, facilitator between the private sector and what the new skills or those who are unemployed may demand.
Okay, that's very helpful because I think it provides a context to really begin to understand, get under the skin of these words, public, private, how do these agencies actually work together. And I'm going to turn to Brad now to talk about the Northeast Ohio Cleveland Initiative. It's important just before you start to, you know, rehearse what, of course, Bruce said at the beginning and what Greg has reiterated, that in many ways the notion of urban regeneration, let's call it that, or the transition to the next economy, in this case, in your three cases, called a metropolitan business plan. But that word, for us non-Americans, is interesting. It's a methodology. It's a different way of actually thinking about engagement. So, Brad, if you could tell us a little bit about that, but also reflect now or later on some of the issues that Jordi has articulated about the role of governance in setting that agenda.
Sure, and I guess a question I have, Ricky, if Jordi, you called us to do it in Barcelona, is it fair to say that I have Barcelona envy?
Let's not go there.
I'm not going to try to cover the whole business plan that we have. It's in your materials. But Greg, you asked the question about whether metropolitan business planning approaches can work in the U.S., and let's just cut to the answer. Yes, they can, and they are working. We've been at it for about 7 or 8 years in Northeast Ohio, and it's proving effective, and it's delivering results. And also, to cut to the chase, a big piece of this has been getting the horizontal alignment across the community between multiple sectors. And Derek Douglas earlier talked about getting horizontal alignment among the agencies of the federal government. And then Derek pointed as well as the need to get to the vertical alignment between the levels of government, whether that's federal, state, regional, local, neighborhood, and such. We'd like to see, and we'd like to take up that call to action of saying, we believe that there's value in the federal government engaging with metropolitan regions around the country on the uniqueness of their plans and aligning existing investments around that. So if that's of interest to you in this room, talk to us because we want to carry that forward. We think it's the next logical step in economic policy, and it's a practical step that we can take right now in the United States that doesn't call for new money. So let me come back. I said horizontal alignment. I guess that what that really means is that we are consenting adults engaging in unnatural acts. In that as we work in a region, we've tried to pull together multiple sectors. I'm from philanthropy. We've put some $70 to $75 million over the last several years into an economic competitiveness program. And we've partnered with the organized business community as well as universities like Case Western Reserve University, public officials, and the like. And we've done that across multiple geographies. One of the challenges, but ultimately one of the great opportunities in Northeast Ohio, is that we're multiple metropolitan areas. There's Cleveland, Akron, Canton, Youngstown, and the like. And we have come together around this idea of an integrated business plan, recognizing, as Saskia said earlier, that everything's connected to everything. And it's around developing new industry clusters, linking that to the workforce system that we have, ensuring that it's inclusive for the citizens living in our urban areas and our rural areas, and ensuring that we have a government that aligns with that. Now, a theme underlying all of that is realizing that we need to be unique and understand who we are. And who we are in Northeast Ohio is that we know how to make things. Manufacturing is at the core of our economy. It's about 17% of direct employment, about 45% of total employment. And we're not running away from that, because what we see is global forces coming our way that we can get to the next generation of manufacturing. Now, the challenge we face is that for many small to mid-sized manufacturers, they need a little help in terms of getting to the next point. And why do they need that help? It's because part of the challenge over the last several years is that the OEM and the cost productivity push has caused small to mid-sized manufacturers to underinvest in innovation, cut back on product development and market research sorts of skills. And so they get stuck in a vicious cycle of pushing for productivity and not being able to invest in the future. So what we're trying to do as a community is to bring the entire student body, every resource we have, and to lay it against a set of potentially high-growth, mid-sized manufacturers to help them move to new markets, whether that's ideation services, whether it's product development support, linking them to our research universities, linking them to our workforce intermediaries and the like. It's a simple concept, obviously challenging to execute. And we see that it will potentially pay dividends. And it really is about linking the whole community. And we expect to have more stories. I'll give one story that I'll stop. There's a company in Akron that it has, excuse me, in Kent, Ohio. It's spun out of Kent State University. They build on the liquid crystal display technology that that came out of Kent. We've married it with the thin roll polymer processing technology that comes out of the University of Akron, given its support with our intermediary that's working on flexible electronic materials. And now we have a company called Kent Displays, which is making a next generation of consumer electronic products manufactured right in Northeast Ohio that is selling like hotcakes in Asia. And so we think we can have many more stories like that through this sort of intentional strategy.
I think well, first of all, Mr. Ishizaki, you should clearly be going to buy American products there.
I've got a brochure.
I think that's, we've heard it's all being made there. So, and I think that was an interesting point you had made. And you're coming back and saying that's the strength of the local economy. I want to ask you the same question. You've been doing this now for 7-8 years. Given what's happened in your city, which wouldn't have happened otherwise, what's one measurable outcome? Because there's a lot of hope, and we're going to hear more about those initiatives which are sort of moving forward. Can you say something?
I absolutely can. If you would go back a decade ago, the best piece of advice that you could give an entrepreneur who wanted to start a business was to move. Right now in Northeast Ohio, we believe and can arguably say that we're one of the leading venture capital markets between the coasts. Last year was a bad year in venture capital, and we only had $100 million going into our companies. If you would have told us 10 years ago that $100 million would have been a bad year, we would have been doing cartwheels down Euclid Avenue in Cleveland, Ohio. And so that has gone up by a factor of 10. And I think it's most recently reflected in the LSE Brookings report last week, where we went from being at the bottom of the heap to, in this post-recessionary period, we're proud to be in the top third.
Okay. Right. We'll come back to the instruments that brought that about, because I think that's important for people here to understand. Here, what practically did you do? Time magazine this week has an article in its international version, which I think is called What Can Cleveland Learn from Torino, from Turin. Both manufacturing-based industries, economies with a close attachment to the car industry, in your case, Fiat. So I'd like now Sergio Camperino to talk a little bit about the Turin story and perhaps focus a little bit on how you also work with other political institutions, both in terms of the EU, the European Union. I think important to understand how a supranational body helps, but also, as you say, horizontally with maybe the bank institutions and, of course, private sector. I think try
to keep... Okay. thank you. It's also for me it's an honor to be here in Japan. Turin is in the north of Italy, and it's very close to the mountains, the Alps. So the weather is not so different from Chicago. We organized the Olympics Winter Games 2006. One reflection, the four cities extra-US all organized the Olympic Games, winter or summer? It's a question. But Turin, as Greg said, has been new, like the Italian Troy. I give you only an idea of the crisis that in between the 80s and the 90s we faced. In the 1982, 1981, 1982, we had 430,000 people employed in the industry, the manufacturing. In the 80s, we lost more than 100,000 people in 10 years. In the same period,
jobs. You jobs. Lost the jobs, jobs. Rather jobs. Than jobs. People leaving.
Okay, jobs.
Yeah.
Thank you for helping me with the English. In the same period, we had more or less 10 million square meters of abandoned industrial sites. This is an idea of the inside in the city, practically in the center of the city. We try to face this situation out, but as Greg said, first of all, with a long-term planning, with two instruments, a town master plan, focused in particularly to the restoring of the abandoned sites, and the two strategic plans. One at the end of the 90s, and the second one just after the Olympic with the game 2006, to consider the effects of the Olympics Winter Games. But the goals? In general, two. First, the transformation of manufacturing. I would like to underline, not to substitute, but to modernize, to transform, like
Dieter
said yesterday. Now, Mr. Marchione, that probably know is the CEO of Chrysler Group, proposed to invest in Turin, in the Mirafiori plant of Turin, 1 billion euro to produce new model. This is what I think for the transformation and modernization of manufacturing. The second one is social cohesion. Social cohesion. Because when you lost 100,000 jobs in relationship with 400,000 employed, you have a great problem of social cohesion. And this had to be a goal of a long-term plan. The instrument, the policies. The policies was the modernization and diversification of manufacturing, in particular, promoting the development of knowledge, not only at the high level, but only at the middle and the diffuse level in the society. Infrastructure, material like high-speed train or immaterial, and as I said, urban quality and also safety, urban safety. Ricky said the cooperation between the different institutions. We had a strong cooperation between, regardless the different political majority. We had a strong cooperation between the region and the city, particularly during the Winter Games, but also for the project to the European Union. We attract 205 million euro from the European funds for different for social, but also to attractive for the attraction of investment.
And importantly, had you not worked together as the city and the region, you would have failed to receive that level of funding.
Yeah. Another cooperation that is very important for us is in relationship with the social cohesion, that is the cooperation with the philanthropic sector, like bank foundation. Without bank foundation, for us, it would be impossible to maintain the level of social policy that we maintain, in relationship also with the cut of the budget. But to cooperate, for the cooperation is you need a strong leadership. You need a strong vision and a strong leadership. And the leadership, as yesterday said, is not intrinsic in an institution. Is you have to gain day by day the leadership. And let me underline a question. You are a strong leadership when you are able to listen and to put together all the actors, the strongest, but also the weakest. The strongest, but also the weakest. Because if you are not able to put together the strongest and the weakest, you are not a leader. You are not able to involve all the community. This is my experience. This is my experience. And the results, and we have results, because between 2000 and 2007, we had the unemployment rate decreased from 8 to 4.5%. And now we have to face the new international crisis, but I think that the city is stronger. There is just a last question, but just a word. The debt. The debt and the resources. Let me conclude with a question for Ricky and for Greg. How to have government, how to have public policies without public resources, with the situation of the public debt that in Europe, but also in the US, we have?
Thank you very much for that. I mean, we'll, I will pick up a number of these themes, but I think in terms of measures, it's important to remember that I mentioned the 67% majority you had in 2006 when you were re-elected. But think that that happened, this is for as background for all of us in this conference, at a time that fiat had its major crisis, that the, you know, stiff competition from the rest of the world. So the sense of sort of support for these initiatives went very, very deep. Let's now move back to the States and to Seattle and the Puget Sound area. And Chris, if you could tell us a little bit about your initiative and very much connect and help us understand who's doing it. Why you? Why is the mayor not here?
Well, the Puget Sound region is 3.7 people, and we house about 2/3 of the population of our state. Our employment is about 1.9 million. The Puget Sound Regional Council, who I work for, is our four-county regional government, and it includes 82 cities, four ports, eight federally recognized tribes, and we have been making land use and transportation policy decisions regionally for over 25 years. A big thank you goes to the city of Barcelona, because one of the things that we do in the Puget Sound well is that we get good ideas from other places and then implement them. And in 2002, our Trade Development Alliance and Seattle Chamber made their annual study mission to Barcelona. They were very impressed with the level of cooperation on all the different levels, not only of government, but with business. And what our leaders realized was that while our cities and counties, and big cities and small cities, were cooperating and making good decisions regionally, we were not including a lot of really important players. We didn't have business at the table, we didn't have nonprofits, labor, or education. So after they came back from Barcelona, two transformational things happened in our region. Number one, the Central Puget Sound Economic District, which was a standalone agency, was brought into the Puget Sound Regional Council as the third leg of our partnership for regional planning, which is transportation, land use, and now economic development. The second thing is the Prosperity Partnership was formed. And that's an organization of over 350 business, nonprofit, education, labor, and government. Everybody's at the table. And they came together with one main function and purpose, and that was to create a regional strategic plan for economic development for our region. And that plan is cluster-based. We have over 15 clusters where we're over the national average in employment concentration. You know, we're home to Boeing and Microsoft, Starbucks and Costco, Amazon. And this was before the recession, we just knew that we need to be looking for what was next, be looking ahead for what our next opportunity was for our region. So our strategy is cluster-based, and then we have foundation initiatives. Those are like business, climate, education. Education, of course, we talked about today and yesterday, how important it is, and transportation. The same intentionality in our regional strategy was one of the reasons we were so excited about doing the Metropolitan Business Plan, because what we did was we looked at our emerging clusters. And of course, one of them is clean tech. You know, 40% of our 24,000 jobs in clean tech are in energy efficiency, and particularly in energy efficiency of buildings. So we chose that. It also leverages our strength in software and in IT that we have in the region, and it's a national and regional and statewide and global initiative, is the energy efficiency, and most importantly, the export of that technology. So we put together a group of 40 experts, industry, education, labor, people in the business, and said, what are the barriers to taking a good idea or a good product for energy efficiency and moving it into a successful market? And they told us two things. The first was performance verification. When you're selling a product, you have to have some way of substantiating that you're actually going to be saving your client 20%, 30%, 40% on your technology. And then the second barrier was technology integration, which is once these new products and services come out in the market, how do they work in the existing building environment? So our committee came up with the Building Energy Efficiency Testing and Integration Center and Demonstration Network, and we lovingly call her Betty. At Betty, an entrepreneur innovator can come and bring their technology to the center. They can test it in the laboratory. They can collaborate with other people in the industry. They can improve it. Once they're satisfied with that, then it moves to our demonstration network. In our area, we're blessed with large military installations. We are blessed with companies and organizations who have a strong environmental ethic, who want to have energy efficiency be one of the things that we are known for globally. So we'll have a series of residential, commercial, and industrial buildings where these products or services can be tested in the real world, see how they integrate with the other systems, see how they integrate with human beings using them, and then we can move on and help them with marketing and commercialization of their products through the Betty Center.
Again, I mean, it's a
very interesting, very important initiative, which goes to the heart of what Joseph Ackerman was saying in terms of bottom-up approaches and to what Bruce was setting out as sort of this global vision. Why could this not have happened without your initiative as a sort of overall structure? Why couldn't someone come up and just think of this as a great market opportunity, get funding from a bank, and get on with it? And this relates to, I think, a key issue, and I'd like perhaps Jordi to come back to it, which is the role of planning. In a sense, I mean, this is a sort of a one-off, a very important one-off. So first of all, could you just reflect with us as to what it is you're doing in creating the climate to make this happen?
And that's what.
And it wouldn't have happened, or might it not have happened otherwise?
I don't think so. It's one of the most exciting things that I think we do in the Puget Sound region, is that we have our higher education institutions here at the University of Washington and Washington State University. We have the Pacific National Labs involved. We have local government. We have business. Microsoft and Boeing are at the table. And then we have the utilities who are there. So we really have all the people who need to be there are used to working together. They're used to setting aside political party issues or parochial issues, and they're used to looking at what's good for the region, and that's how we do business.
And can you help us understand, and obviously being facetious by saying, where's the mayor? What is the position of the mayor? What is the position of the state in this initiative?
The city of Seattle is the one who brought this project to us, and we are very thankful. One of the reasons they brought the project to us is because it will have such a regional impact and the importance of getting everyone on board. So we have a new mayor in Seattle. He's in his first year. He's on board with this and very much excited about energy efficiency. I think most people know that the Puget Sound region is very the environment is part of our DNA.
Jordi, if I can ask you in sort of to comment on this, in not just as an initiative, whether it's worthy or not, whether it's going to work or not, but if I think of it in comparison to the Barcelona Economic Triangle, which is a sort of a region-wide initiative with three big hubs and everything else, which has, or maybe doesn't have, the power of the municipal stroke regional authority behind it to implement. Describe that in 30 seconds and give us your comments on what you've heard just presented for Puget Sound.
Taking into account what has been said all the day about the metros, we had a lot of space for industries to go in. Then we were dozens of years of debates between the state level and the metro level and the private sector. So one of the great advantages of crisis is it helps people sit together and try to unify forces. Because the metro alone were not able, the private alone were not able, and the state alone were not able. So in fact, there is no real legal basis for, but what we decided is to join forces, to go abroad, and in the different real estate fairs which are around Europe, inverted commas, sell ourselves, right? So the idea of this Barcelona Economical Triangle initiative is to join and put together what is already there, but separately was more difficult. And that's the idea of trying to join forces.
Talking of joined forces, two cities have been working very closely together, and I'm going to ask Tom Ryback now to talk about your initiative, picking up some of the themes that you and Mary Coleman talked about yesterday, and then open up the discussion in the next quarter of an hour. Thanks.
R.T. Ryback is my name. I'm the mayor of Minneapolis, and I'm here with, as you mentioned in the introduction, Mayor Chris Coleman of St. Paul, who's been a very strong partner in this, but we also have here our partners from business, General Mills, Target, Foundation Partners, McKnight, State of Minnesota, and we've put together a great coalition, but that really is especially unusual considering our history. To really understand that, think of the Mississippi River and think of two very important points at the far north end of it. One is the northernmost point of navigation, that's where St. Paul is, and just a few miles away is the only natural waterfall in Mississippi, That's where Minneapolis is. That point of navigation turned St. Paul into an extraordinarily important port and railroad center. The waterfall became the power that turned Minneapolis into, at one point, the milling capital of the world. We grew up as relatively homogeneous, and we grew up fighting each other for dominance of a region. And that became baked deeply into our culture. The economy grew, that those mills diversified. General Mills came. You have Betty, we have Betty Crocker, and we like her. A mill business in northern Minnesota moved into St. Paul and began inventing things like Scotch tape and Post-its, and 3M became obviously a huge part of our work. Small dry goods manufacturer opened Dayton's department store that grew, that launched a discount store that turned into Target stores, and we became a retail center with not only Target and Best Buy, but many others. So we became a very strong region, but we continued to fight each other. And what also became clear is that a region that had been very strong economically had begun to slip a bit. Our entrepreneurship had always been a hallmark of our work. Earl Bakken, for instance, was a scientist to an engineer who went into his garage and developed what later became all of the different products that became Medtronic and made us dominant in medical device. But our entrepreneurship had slipped. We had always created jobs faster than the rest of the country, and that was slipping as well. In large part, do I have to say to Brookings and Bruce and Amy and the team, we convened the business leaders into something called the Itasca Group. And the Itasca Group brought all the top CEOs to the table and really took on some of these tough issues. And the government leaders were invited in. We partnered there. The universities and the state were all part of it. We launched a five-point plan that is part of our work. The first part is that we're now creating a regional economic development entity. That may not sound like rocket science, but it's hugely important for a region, and really any region, that has so many different competing entities that do business creation. This is led by the large businesses, but Mayor Coleman and I and other governments around the region are also financial contributors to that effort. We formed a regional mayors association. So it's not only Mayor Coleman and I, but mayors throughout the region. And one of our key initiatives was to really drill down into clusters and focus on what we could do together on the medical device industry. Mayor Coleman and I then launched what had been called the Mayor's Green Jobs Initiative. It's now called Think Green, and it's an initiative that really focuses on green manufacturing. We also then, working with Jumpstart, have launched an Entrepreneurship Accelerator, which is a single portal that can really be a place for entrepreneurs to get the support, help, the capital, the technical assistance that they need to rapidly move to market. And then the final point is that we recognize that the physical infrastructure is key to this work. Like most American regions, we sprawled. We now have made a significant investment in transportation and are doing far more investment in that, and aggressively saying that the corridors of opportunity are along transit corridors. So those five pieces are the key to our plan. And so what you see now is a region where you have these major corporations intentionally, as part of this effort, looking at their supply chain and identifying entrepreneurs who they can use in the supply chain instead of randomly going across the globe for and thereby building new entrepreneurship levels. You find a real intentionality in our research and our nonprofits, and looking at how the talent and the resources we have in our clusters like medical device can help propel new industries. We have intentionally been a very, very open city on immigration, on the GLBT community. We're a community that welcomes everyone, so we are a great talent attractor. We now have populations that speak 100 languages, and so we're very global savvy. Which is very helpful to our employees. And more than anything else, I think you have a couple mayors from cities that used to fight each other, working together with other mayors, with business and universities and the state, and I think we're creating a real hothouse for innovation.
Just a brief moment, thanks for articulating that. The point that Sergio Camperino made about the plan, the city plan, the town, let's call it, we would call it the city master plan, allied to a strategic employment plan and social cohesion plan, very importantly. How does that work? Because effectively, the new master plan in Turin in the space of 6-7 years meant that institutions like the university, instead of moving out, moved in. They have to change zoning regulations, allow more density, and all that sort of stuff. What's the status of the planning of these two cities and the region?
Well, first off, I think it's easy for a politician to sit up on stage and say we have a master plan, and then you do that like you're Robert Moses of the new American city. That's not really how it works. The reality is I thought you might say that. Yeah. Well, first you have to look at market forces, and it's a little like sailing.
Is that correct? Should you look at market forces first?
Absolutely. You're either sailing into the wind and having your boat knocked over or using the wind to propel you. So what we did is really look at all of those forces that we're moving forward. The place where the public needs to play a role is in physical infrastructure. Transportation, I think, is critical. We believe that there is a gap in our venture capital. So we did an angel investment tax credit. We're looking for the feds to do that as well. So those were a couple of areas, but also looking, doing a very clear scan about what is the ecosystem for entrepreneurship. And when you really identify what those gaps are, you have to listen as well as talk and map these things out. I do finally have to say that I've heard a lot of people saying, gee, we're going to have to do this without the federal government and this and that. Let's get honest with ourselves here. The federal government has stepped up dramatically to help regionalism under the Obama administration. They saved the auto industry, for starters. Let's get honest about that. But also are making it much easier for us to intersperse housing and economic development and transportation together. I don't think we should be neutral on what's been happening in Washington. We just have to defend that.
One concrete example of how you have made a difference in terms of jobs, entrepreneurship in the last 5-10 years. Not you personally, this right. initiative.
We've attracted key employers. Minnesota normally grows their own. I was very happy we attracted Coloplast, 500 jobs in medical device. It's a key piece of that work. We are working the supply chain. It's the second piece of that. And I think this idea of Target or Carlson companies buying locally and then starting a new entrepreneur is critically important.
Okay. Now, I think we have time. I'm going to come to you in a second, but are we able to take questions from the floor? Are the microphones set up for that? Are they? Maybe. Can anyone help? Okay. Are there microphones? I just can't see from here. Right, okay. In a moment, I'm going to come and ask for a few questions from the floor. Sergio, you wanted to comment.
A very, very short remarks about cooperation. First, you can't avoid the informal level. Informal level is essential for the cooperation.
Rather than institutional and political.
Between the past.
Right.
The second one is the stronger are the leadership, the different leadership, stronger is the cooperation. Because weak leadership are afraid of what is happening around them. And conclusion, to face the crisis and the transformation, because crisis is transformation, you need stronger politics, not weak politics.
That's an important point to make. Now, can we have the lights up and a few questions? What I'd like to make sure that they're not long statements. Tell us who you are very briefly and really keep it to less than a minute, please. Gentleman over there.
I'm George Ranney from Chicago Metropolis 2020 here in town. We've been successful over the last decade in creating a regional planning agency, CMAP, that's just put out a really excellent plan in the last couple of months. It has real opportunities for dealing with capital dollars, particularly for transportation. Question here is, have you found a way to make those kinds of planning decisions for operations? This has been a real issue for us, and I know elsewhere as well.
So your question is to anyone in particular?
Anyone?
You're talking about the difference
provoked by the
and
Minnesota
operating.
Example.
Right.
Yeah, you're talking about the difference in. Go ahead.
In Washington State, operation of transit is largely subsidized by sales tax, and we've been successful in leading a transportation ballot issue for rapid, we call it sound transit, so rapid transit. That was about 5 years ago. one of the big keys to success was having Microsoft and Boeing behind it, along with government and transit agencies, but operations are
Tom, on this?
I would say that we've made progress on capital, we've made some on operating, but we don't have enough. And I think we all can talk as much as we want about green, but if we're sprawling around the area, somehow driving an hour and a half to get to this place where we make something that's remotely green, that's not worth it. I really think we saw great progress a couple years ago when gas prices were higher. The only problem is that the profit with that going higher happened to be the people who were jacking up the prices. I believe if we're really serious about this, we should do what we've seen happen in Europe. When gas prices are high enough, you have a new physical model. So I frankly would like us to see Chicago, Minneapolis, St. Paul, Seattle, all of us together, Cleveland, really advocate the idea of a federal raise in the gas tax that would go toward dramatic reinvestment in the transportation infrastructure, and that is the greenest thing we could do to create many jobs and get us off our addiction to oil. And addicts do dumb things, they hang around with bad people. And we are doing dumb things, and we're hanging around with bad people. We got to fix it.
So, Jordi said, what can be done at the metropolitan level, though, without waiting for such a dramatic national change?
Well, as I tried to say at the beginning, we had, a plan for the core of the metro. And since 10 years ago, we moved it to the metro level. We've been talking about the infrastructures for a long time, saying and thinking what we need in terms of energy, in terms of transportation, and so on. Then finally, and as Sergio said, we also moved a step forward. It's not only a question of infrastructures, which it is, but also a question of human beings who are living there. What they will need, what are their expectations, what sort of quality of life they want. So we want to put a plan, not only the corporations, which of course, but also the universities, also the trade unions, also the parties, everybody there.
Right, that's okay. Let me take just one other question there. Thank you.
Yes.
Please tell us who you are.
Diane Palmer, Innovation Associates. Well, I applaud all of the regional, local and regional collaboration that has gone into these initiatives here. I think it's really important to recognize the role of the U.S. federal funding, such as the Economic Development Administration and the Manufacturing Extension Partnership, that I know is directly involved in some of your initiatives, as well as some of the state funding and European Union funding that is involved in your initiatives and in Trina, Barcelona, Munich, and others. I'd like to ask the panelists what programs have actually benefited and been of value to your initiative, and well, I'll leave it there.
Brian?
Well, thank you for raising that point. It's a hugely important point. And we simply couldn't be doing what we're doing in Northeast Ohio without the state of Ohio's Third Frontier Bond Initiative, which Bruce Katz mentioned, which has put literally hundreds of millions of dollars into our priority efforts. And we've written into our business plan that we need to be aligned with the state of Ohio's Third Frontier Program. And this work that's being led by the Manufacturing Advocacy and Growth Network, MAGNET, our manufacturing work, is greatly helped by NIST and the MEP program and so forth. And in fact, the federal government invests over $7 billion a year in our economy. So what we're talking about is to move from initiative and project-based relationships into an alignment around the broad set of priorities. And so it's about aligning that investment as opposed to as to taking it piece by piece.
I'm going to ask Greg to comment on this and actually wind up because of time. But I'd like everyone in the room and yourselves to pick up this word you used before, envy, without any of the connotations. But what is it that we've all learned today from the presentations throughout the morning that we would go away and want to implement in our own city? I think that's an important issue. I'm not going to ask everyone to do that. You've already mentioned what you picked up from Barcelona, and I think the discussion is around. Seems to me the one thing that becomes very, very important, the word hasn't been used, but it cuts across everything you're saying, is trust.
Yeah.
And there's a level of trust that is required to cut across many of the institutions. Certainly the individual relationship building becomes important, but I think without that, little is going to happen. Greg, on that point, and then we wind up. Brian, just speak with
the okay, on the money side, I think it's important to stress that in the case studies that I was talking about, including in Seoul, you have multiple tiers of pub funding, all investing in a sense in the same plan. And at the EU level, you not only have public money that's oriented around a regional development agenda, which of course covers every region, not just some regions, but you also have very interesting financial institutions like the European Investment Bank, which is in effect a European infrastructure and green bank, and exists, provides multiple loans when cities host the Olympic Games, they borrow money when they want to do fast rail, they borrow money when they want to do energy conversion, they borrow money. So there is something in the mix of financing that is both about regional development, and it's also about very long-term use of the capital markets to finance things that are good in terms of building a green innovative economy. So that's very important. When you have that alignment, Ricky, there's lots of evidence to show you get much better leverage of private dollars as well. And I think everybody in the room probably knows that there are multiple billions, if not trillions, of private money that's looking for exactly the kind of investment prospectus that they've been talking about. I think the thing to take away from this conversation, if I may, is this issue of building not on, as it were, an idea of what everyone else is doing, but focusing on the core assets and strengths, the distinctive, unique identity of the metropolitan area that's involved. That's the only future, to be more like ourselves, not more like someone else.
Thank you very much, Greg. Now, before we thank the panelists, can I ask you after this to go for lunch in the large room on the other side? The way to get there is through the two sets of curtains of either side of the openings behind you. But before you do that and contemplate and get ready for a discussion with global figures from UN Habitat and from Brazil to discuss the many of these themes at an even more global and international level. Will you join me in thanking the five panelists and Greg?